So welcome to another edition of the Liberty Wealth Podcast, or actually it's the Liberty Wealth Show now. We are rebranding, and today we are joined by Chris Karabatz of Smart Cash. What we're going to talk about today is how Alex Jones calls Bitcoin a global scam and giant pump-and-dump scheme. And I think in many regards, he probably is correct about a lot of things, and he's probably even more right than he even knows. And he's also sort of using Bitcoin and crypto and blockchain, as a lot of us do, interchangeably. So, you know, I know with his audience, it's not something that he really focuses on, but I think there's a lot of really good pieces that he should be focusing on that it can really help, you know, a lot of the things that he's trying to help, a lot of things that he's trying to do and promote could be helped through blockchain technology. I saw one of his guests he had on right before this was Gavin McGinnis, and Gavin McGinnis, you know, they were going on about how they've both been shadow banned, they've both been, you know, deplatformed and taken off all these different platforms, and then they start talking about, you know, the need, you know, how we've got to, you know, basically sue our way back onto these platforms. And I don't think suing your way onto all these enemy platforms is really the answer. What could be the answer is using blockchain technology where you've got, you know, an IPF server that can't be taken down, and that node then goes out to other nodes and other servers. And, you know, if you try to kick down the door of Alex Jones' server, well, you know, unfortunately for the, you know, the bad guys, that server's in, you know, 100 different locations or 1,000 different locations, and the signal can't be stopped, and that can be greatly facilitated through blockchain. Or you're going to have, you know, they're sort of not ready for the prime time yet, but I guess you've got, you know, Steemit and DTube that are out there, especially DTube. I mean, I always have problems trying to upload to DTube. Maybe I'm just doing something wrong or not smart enough or something going on with that. But, you know, these technologies really could be the answer for what he's looking for. And so it is, you know, very, you know, just discerning, seeing, you know, that he, you know, does not really grasp, you know, what could be the larger picture. So what I actually want to do is actually want to go ahead and play a clip from the Alex Jones show, which, you know, I'm trying to find the clip that I'm not sure what I ended up doing with it. But yeah, what are your thoughts so far on all this, Chris, and what Alex Jones calling it a scam and pump and dump scheme? And
I'll get on my soapbox for a moment here and say, you know, for the longest time, you know, Bitcoin does give the government everything they want in an entirely digital currency. They know how much money everybody has. They know exactly all your transactions, and they can have control of everything if it is indeed a centralized blockchain they're controlling. You know, and Alex is not the only person I've heard talk about this. You know, when I was at Libertopia, some guy came up to me and ranted about how all cryptocurrency was just a, you know, a Jewish conspiracy to take all our wealth, you know, yada, yada, yada. But I feel, you know, the reason I'm in this space is I think that it does give the tools for us to actually gain control of our money again and have actual free market currency. And regardless of what, you know, the big names, Bilderbergs, whoever you want to say, control Bitcoin, you know, I think that we still have a responsibility to push for free market money out there and actually try to get good free market money established and used and functional in the real world, so that when, you know, the Fed coin comes, or the EU coin, or, you know, the worldwide petrodollar comes, that we have a functioning alternative, and the government, like you said, won't be able to shut us down because it will be on a decentralized blockchain, a decentralized ledger that anybody can access from anywhere.
Absolutely. And, you know, what I want to do right now is I want to get into the clip of Alex Jones, and I want to, you know, I don't really want to gloss too much over the, you know, you'd mentioned the Bilderberg group and how they're tied into this. So, you know, most people who are listening to this, or certainly the Alex Jones crowd, which I know I used to be a part of, that, you know, they don't know the bigger story of this. So I do want to then, you know, touch base on that. But first, I'm going to go to this clip, and then we'll take it from there.
He didn't tell anybody that Jack Dorsey spends millions of dollars a quarter with Joe Rogan. We'll get into the companies they push, but they push cryptocurrency bubbles. The whole 2 hours is pushing Bitcoin as the global currency. We need a global government. Never telling you, hey, we're heavily invested in this. Hey, as soon as it hit its market peak, Jack Dorsey dumped it. This makes Martha Stewart look like an angel. And not telling you that his cashless system is the number one sponsor on Joe's show for over a year. That's called unethical on its face. And that's just one of his sponsors. I started poking around. No wonder he said George Soros cut Hitler's head off and was a huge, you know, Captain America was basically him, even though he was a Nazi. He's on the payroll. On the payroll, folks. So about a year and a half ago, before Bitcoin plunged, I'd already turned down $100,000, $200,000 a month to take on these different Bitcoin companies. And I wasn't saying crypto itself was bad, but I knew that it had been pushed by the establishment. It was being put out as this, oh, global currency, but it's anti-establishment to get folks to adopt it. Only way you can get the grassroots to do it is act like it's anti-establishment. And so I saw that going on, and then it reached $1 million a month.
So I'm actually going to pause it right there because I made this video about a month and a half ago, but then ended up having something with like an intern and other stuff where we were going to have interns who are going to help post some of this stuff, and then that ended up not happening. So that's why today I was doing a marathon session of making different videos. But here, since this video was created, Alex Jones, as most people know, was on the Joe Rogan Experience, where he had an incredibly popular, I think as of right now, there's like 8.8 million on YouTube alone. I'm sure there's probably like an equal or even greater amount on iTunes. But Alex Jones went out on a limb and again said that it was George Soros that offered him money to pump Bitcoin. And, you know, I think that I'm a little bit skeptical of this claim. And I think that Alex doesn't really fully understand all the different ways that technology could help him, especially when it comes to how technology could actually solve the very problems of censorship that he is currently being faced. But anyways, without further ado, here is the clip from the Joe Rogan Experience from just a few days ago.
Offered at the time, like $5 million worth of Bitcoin. I think it was like $38 million by the time it got there. I refused it. And I got told like 8 years ago, I got told by two different people, very well-known rich people. They said, George Soros likes you. He wants to work with you and Alexander Soros and this other Soros. You just need to stop attacking him.
Mm.
And by the way, we want you to pump Bitcoin, dollars worth of Bitcoin.
Millionaires. I want to make all of you millionaires.
That they were ready to pay me, these companies. And I remember talking to family and I said, this is like the tulip bubble, whether it's a real technology or not. I'm not telling my listeners get involved in something that's offering me $1 million a month. That means they're about to dump it. The fact it's gone from $100,000 a month offer with companies to $1 million a month means they're pulling their money out in the Ponzi scheme. They want to bring in all the new suckers with a big advertising push to prop it up, so it collapses months later and they don't get the blame for pulling their money out, which is the crime, when they know it's going down. It's called the pump and dump. Now, old Joe likes to giggle with Mr. Darcy. And both of them want to sue me. Sweet as pie, let's do it, because I like that discovery.
All right. And, you know, there's definitely, you know, a lot of takeaways, I guess, from that clip. I mean, you know, because he is right. I mean, in many respects, you know, there's obviously are a lot of pump and dump schemes. There's a lot of, you know, BS ICOs. There's a whole bunch of, I mean, probably 99.9% of what was coming into the space in 2018 was crap. You know, there was even groups dedicated to pump and dumps. I mean, where they had coordinated pump and dumps that were, you know, open about their, you know, I don't say open and honest about their pump and dump. But, you know, so he's sort of, you know, using the word Bitcoin as this one catch-all. And a lot, and when you hear, you know, some of his show, you know, here he did, you know, seem to parse out the difference between, you know, crypto and not all of them are scams. But most of the time he doesn't do that. And so I think he's absolutely right, you know, to be skeptical of this. But, you know, guys like him, and he had Peter Schiff on, you know, maybe a month or two ago. And he was like, you know, Peter, you're absolutely right. You know, Bitcoin, you know, ended up plunging and you called this all along. And, you know, he said it was a scam at $70 and to get out, you're going to lose all your money. And I've got the clips. And actually, I've never released this, but I do have an entire mashup that I've made, whereas Peter Schiff is right, Bitcoin edition, but he's saying, you know, at $70, like, get out, it's going down. And like $120, get out, it's going down. And $250, then $1,000, and $2,000, and $7,000, and $10,000, and $20,000. But yeah, I mean, and so it's very, very, you know, crazy, especially for somebody like me who was helping set up a company where people could offload the crypto they bought in a legit way into these different types of trust. And that, you know, wasn't, you know, meant to be like, hey, let's go, you know, let all these suckers hold the bag. It's, you know, hey, maybe you have got, you know, $15, $20 million in crypto and maybe we can shed, you know, 5-10 of it off and you can live the dream lifestyle that you've always wanted to live and still have another 5-10 million in crypto as the house's money. And that's just good financial planning. I don't think that's anything to do with, you know, anyone trying to scam anyone per se. But what I do want to get into is, you know, a little bit of the history of, you know, sort of Bitcoin's origins and why Alex should be skeptical of this. And this is, you know, probably taking the exact, and it's funny because right as we're going live, I see in the bottom of my screen that Tone Vase is live on YouTube and talking about, Jack Dorsey and Bitcoin and all the great things about it. So it's funny that this is pretty much the, probably the exact opposite take of that. And we will have that podcast, the one that we did with Tone Vase, coming out shortly. But if you look at the, you know, some of the history of where Bitcoin came from, you've got to, you know, sort of, you know, first have to go back to a white paper that the NSA did. I believe it was 96. I can't remember the exact year, but their paper was called How to Make a Mint, the Cryptography of Anonymous Electric Cash. And if you look at it, I mean, it almost is sort of like a precursor white paper for what Satoshi did. And then you see this, you know, you can go and you can find that white paper online. It's at MIT. We'll have this actually linked in the show notes. Then you've got this anonymous person or consortium, Satoshi Nakamoto, comes up with Bitcoin. Then you start looking a little bit, you know, a few years later, you've got, you know, this core group of developers who were, you know, there, they weren't getting paid. They were volunteering their time and, you know, there's nothing wrong with people getting paid, but you look at, you know, who's paying Blockstream, and they ended up getting their first round of seed money, $55 million, I believe. Tone said it was five in Ernie's show. I believe it's 55. So, you know, 55, mm-hmm. 5 million, you know, no difference. Mm-hmm. So anyways, they got $55 million from AXA, one of their venture capital arms. So that's AXA, a big major insurance company based out of France, was the first company I ever interviewed for them, so I'm very familiar with who they are. And so when I read that story, I go, wait a minute, the head of AXA is Henry de Castries, and he also happens to be the head of the Bilderberg Steering Committee. And so I go ahead and I tell Ernie this, and then Ernie then ends up CCing me on an email with Tone Vase before I knew who he was. And then I know he completely dismissed it, and now his line is, well, he's not the head of it anymore. And so I think, so if you were to say, you know, if Bitcoin were to be hijacked, what would you, you know, by the globalists, what would happen? Well, you know, they'd probably have to, you know, be, you know, in with the core developers. Okay, well, how would they be in with the core developers? Well, they'd probably have to fund Blockstream. Well, okay, well, then that happened. And then what would they also want to do? Well, they'd probably want to mess it up and make it, you know, somewhat unusable, and then come in with a solution where you'd have to have a centralized solution. And then, then here's Lightning Network right on cue. And then, you know, everyone who wants, you know, like the Roger Veers out there who want, you know, the decentralized options, who want the, you know, the privacy, who have the philosophical know-how and understanding of how this really works. Oh, yep, we're going to go and we're going to, you know, demonize all of them. And, you know, and this is not investment advice right now, because from an investment standpoint, you know, I think there is a big use case and argument to make that Bitcoin, from an investment standpoint, is going to be, you know, probably the better investment per se, just because it is, you know, the brand name of it. You know, a lot of people don't even know that there's, I mean, even until a few years ago, I didn't realize that there's all these other ones, or I wasn't really paying attention. You know, I'd heard of Litecoin before. And then once I found out that Ethereum had these smart contracts, I'm like, oh, that sort of changes the game. That's a lot different. And then I realized, oh, wait, you can, you know, create stock trading platforms from cryptocurrencies where you can, you know, cut out all the middlemen and completely screw the man. Like, oh, that's pretty cool. And, oh, you can, you know, have this where it trades and it settles instantaneously and no more having to wait 3 days for your money to settle. You know, that's pretty cool. And, oh, wait, you can do that where it's going to cost next to nothing. And so there's all these other use cases that Alex Jones, I think, doesn't understand. But then, so I want to say that he is more right than he could possibly know, while also being, you know, almost, I don't say, you know, ignorant or oblivious than he could possibly understand. Because, you know, he's talking about, you know, how they need to, you know, come up with systems where they can't be censored. Well, you know, bingo, you know, it's basically the framework to do that can be done through the blockchain. And I know I've been rambling for a little bit, and I know with you yourself, you know, being part of Smart Cash, that obviously you're not a Bitcoin maximalist, and I've seen it myself where I've seen, you know, the discussion of people that are coming into the space now, you know, want to label, you know, people like Roger Ver, you know, as like a Bitcoin Judas, and want to say that, you know, he's out there for his own personal gain. Whereas, you know, it's like, oh yeah, no, the people that got paid $55 million to promote all this. And what was that for? Oh, not nothing. They were just, you know, AXA just wanted to be good guys and throw them $55 million. You know, so the guys who got paid off $55 million, they don't have bad intentions, but the guy who probably had more money in it than almost anybody out there, Roger Ver, who, you know, staked a lot of his net worth, reputation, honestly, he could have just went along to go along, and he would have been, you know, better off, you know, for his own popularity to just, you know, kind of sell out and go with the system. but he didn't. And so I can see why people think that people that talk our ways are either scammers or either, you know, people to be skeptical of. And, but, you know, I can also understand that they don't know the full bigger picture of really what went on. So I would love the opportunity to be able to get this out to Alex Jones at some point to be able to say, and I've been lobbying, you know, other intermediaries and channels to maybe get to him where I could talk about, you know, the globalist roots. And actually Roger was on his show, and I think it was almost a year ago today. It was like February 8th of last year, because I pulled up the clips a few days ago. But as he's on, he's just getting, they took a bunch of calls, and all the calls that were, you know, all the trolls out there, you know, basically saying that he's a scammer and he's doing this and that and the other thing. So, you know, I'd have been ranting here for a while, but, you know, sir, what's your take on, you know, Alex Jones calling it a scam and, you know, in the Bilderberg influence within Bitcoin, and I guess take it from there.
Well, the Bilderberg group, I mean, I'm not an expert in the area, like, you know, say Alex Jones might be, but it was inevitable that they would try that. And yeah, they don't just give $55 million to Blockstream out of the goodness of their hearts. You know, you are buying influence, and this is what they're going for. And yeah, I mean, that money has helped keep Bitcoin where it is in the crypto space. And, you know, people like Roger Ver leave to go and do their own, you know, do their own thing, trying to keep the roots of what Bitcoin was supposedly started for, you know, depending how conspiracy theory you want to get. And right now, if you look at Ver, he's basically an altcoiner, is what the, you know, maximalists would call him, because he doesn't believe there will be any one crypto to go worldwide. I mean, they're building tokens on top of Bitcoin Cash now. You know, Ver talks about Smart Cash, he talks about Dash, he talks about, you know, Litecoin and all these others. And he is an idealist, he's not a purist. And it's quite interesting how these discussions separate the two in this space. And then, you know, you talk about the big banksters, the globalists, whatever. I mean, you have little things like, you know, Jamie Dimon last year, 2017, talks about how Bitcoin is a scam. It'll fire any of his traders who actually trade it and anything. And then at that exact same time, JP Morgan Chase is buying Bitcoin in the dip. And it's all proven, it's all on the blockchain. That is an advantage of a public blockchain, is that you can actually see these things as they happen. And it's quite entertaining to watch.
Well, actually, I was actually at the Nexus Earth conference where, like, Roger Ver, when that quote was made, and like Roger Ver was, it's the first time I've ever seen him. So like Roger was there, and Max Kaiser was there, and Eric Voorhees. And I mean, just like a hoot, Patrick Byrne, Ron Paul, George Andrew Napolitano. So, I mean, now I'm going out of the crypto space, but in terms of the crypto, I mean, who was it, that one co-founder of Ethereum? I think it was like Joseph Lubin or something. Like, he was, Charles Hoskin.
Yeah, Hoskin
was there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a who's who of everybody. I think they were trying to like formulate like a response back to Jamie Dimon. And then, that was a good buying opportunity where, you know, it dipped, you know, quite a bit after that. And then that was, you know, right before everything started rocking up. So that was like September 2017. That was the first crypto conference I ever went to. And then I realized, wow, this is a lot more than I thought it was. This is not, and just like the breadth and depth of the knowledge that was at that conference was just absolutely ridiculous. And quite a few of those people will be at Interacapoco coming up here very shortly.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. I can't wait to talk to some of those people. We'll have to see what that's going to be like, because it's getting a bit big for Riches too. But I find this all whole globalist conspiracy, Bitcoin will be the global money. No, it won't. I mean, Lightning, I agree with you in that Lightning is not the direction I would want to take what I would consider to be cryptocurrency towards. It's, you know, second, third layer solutions, and it does add a lot of centralization and power to people with the banks and whatnot to the Bitcoin ecosystem. Now, Tone Bays would just, you know, call me a troll for that or whatever, but we all know what, you know, the maximalists like Tone Bays and Jimmy Song actually think about cryptocurrency as money. They tell you that you should use your credit card and then just pay it off with Bitcoin when you feel like it. So they're not my target audience. You know, my target audience is people who are wanting to use cryptocurrency as currency and wanting to actually disrupt the global financial system with something that isn't controlled by the global elite, but something that is freely available to anybody worldwide. I mean, that's why we're pushing, especially in third world countries or, you know, less, you know, developing economies like in South America and Africa, where they really do need this, because we in America, we have just a little bit of inflation, but they, in those other countries, they suffer from hyperinflation fairly regularly. And, you know, the average lifetime of a fiat currency is 27 years. So we have all these giant economies out there built on paper that doesn't mean anything. And we have the ability to give them the tools in cryptocurrency to actually build on themselves. But that requires that we do push these free market tools and not just sit and let the banks take over Bitcoin, let the Bilderberg group take over Bitcoin and turn it into the global reserve currency or whatever their plans are with it in the long term. I don't think they're planning on that. I would fully expect them to try to kill it and then launch a Fed coin or a, you know, UN coin or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, like their special drawing right coin. And you mentioned, you know, it's all based on paper. Well, it used to be based on paper and that, you know, got either too expensive or maybe the paper, you know, is too valuable. So now it's based on, you know, just digital ones and zeros that, you know, the Bank of Japan just, you know, types up a bunch of bullshit on their keyboards and then buys up, you know, 75% of their ETF market, which I don't know the exact number. It's something close to that at one point. At one point, may have been even more than that. But yeah, so, I mean, you know, everything is going cashless, whether you want to like it or not. I mean, it should be. You know, yeah, you can have your gold and you can have your silver and you can do all that stuff, which is good to have. You can have physical cash on hand. But, you know, by and large, how most people transact is already cashless. It's already digital. And it just depends if you want to have, you know, the man track tracing and surveilling you. And you mentioned how you guys are in third world countries, which means pretty soon you might be coming to America at the rate that we are starting to devolve. And we see that, you know, the State of the Union, the little bit that I watched, that they, you know, kept all the pomp and circumstance that was going on. I did take some enjoyment seeing the, you know, the Democrats, you know, faces on certain things and seeing, you know, Bernie Sanders' face and seeing how, you know, hey, we're not going to go murder 9-month-old babies, or we're not even like the governor of Virginia, you know, we're not going to allow you to abort your baby after the baby's already born, and because it's going to hurt the baby. And you see like the Democrats are just sitting there with a scowl on their face, like, oh man, it's like this guy's going to ruin our ability to kill my 9-month-old babies. So, you know, for what you will, it's just like the whole thing is just such a scam. And he's out there, and Trump is out there promoting all the fake bullshit unemployment numbers that, you know, 26 different times that he called, you know, were fake. And I did an entire podcast on that when I actually took a quote from him and I put it out as a meme. And within like 2 weeks had like over 1,000 people unfollow my page, like, you know, how dare you? And it was a quote from Donald Trump that said something to the effect of, you know, these are the most BS, bony, phony baloney numbers like in the history of the world, and talking about the unemployment number. And so I didn't attribute his name to it. And everyone's like, how dare you disparage Donald Trump like that? I'm like, that was actually a Donald Trump quote. So trolling all the MAGA people. But, you know, I do, if you know, it is pretty entertaining, everything that is going on, for nothing else. But what I want to do now is jump to another quote, where another video clip, actually this is an audio clip because I couldn't find the video because I was listening. What happened is I was listening to this and going out for a jog or something, and then screenshotting where it was in the podcast, but the podcast and the video don't line up. And, you know, I'm a busy guy, so I don't have, you know, 9 million hours to go ahead and do this. I'm not the Bad Crypto podcast that has 13 other people working for me and doing all this other stuff. So, you know, no disrespect to them. Just, you know, I don't, you know, have 13 people doing it for me. And actually they don't even do video. So screw them. So I'm already doing more than they're doing anyway. So anyways, here we go. And here's a clip from Jack Dorsey during the now infamous Joe Rogan podcast.
It's a given that any
Actually, I just realized that I wasn't actually sharing it, that I was just playing it from my computer screen. So we will try this again.
Time something, it's going to exist forever. This is what blockchain helps enable down the line. And we need to make sure that we're paying attention to that. And also realizing that, you know, our role is like, how do we get people the stuff that they really want to see and they find valuable, that they'll learn from, that they'll make them think, that will help them evolve the conversation as well.
Now, when you say amplify the messages that you deem to be more positive, right? Like, how do you decide that?
People decide it.
Well, this guy's talking about Bitcoin Cash, so we're not going to amplify him. And this guy's talking about Bitcoin, so we're going to amplify Tone Vase. I mean, I think that's pretty much what, you know, that's pretty much what they mean. You know, and Tone was nice to me, so I don't want to, you know, ragging him too much, but I just know that he's going live right now talking about the exact same thing, but in a positive voice that we're talking about. So I just love the juxtaposition. But it looks like what they're going to do is create some sort of blockchain Twitter where, you know, instead of being decentralized, it's going to be like a, you know, Ripple meets, you know, Steemit or something, where they get the, I see your eyes roll with that one, rightly so. And it's just, you know, you can see exactly where this is going, but, you know, there will be alternatives. I think there already is one. I think it's called like Mastodon or something, but a lot of these are way too hard for the average person to use. It gets overwhelming, because everyone's on Facebook and everyone's on Twitter, but then trying to, you know, so it's like, you know, I've got like 30,000 people on Facebook, but then if I try doing something on Minds and then I take a Minds clip and I post it to Facebook, then Facebook then gives a warning saying, you're not allowed to post this, or do you know that this could be from an unsecure site? And then here's a CAPTCHA. So I actually have a screenshot yesterday of what happened when I tried posting a video I had on Minds over to Facebook. And it actually came up with a warning message about like, are you sure you really want to post this? This could be, you know, unsecure content. And I've got the screenshot on my phone that is just absolutely ridiculous. But, you know, it's weird to see Jack Dorsey actually, you know, talking about how blockchain will kind of create this, you know, forever and always type situation, but, you know, forever and always, as long as they deem it, you know, worthy. And then kind of get your comments on that. And then I've got another clip where they talk about how we're going to be using, you know, facial recognition in order to buy, sell, and transact. And, you know, and that's obviously where they want to tie a Fed.gov, you know, Goldman Sachs coin into this facial recognition software, where then now not only is it not anonymous, but now you're actually putting your own face to it, and it's even more controlled than the system we got off to begin with. So, you know, we had talked about this before. I think every time we pretty much have talked, have been like on this, you know, path of, you know, there's, you know, going to be a fork in the road. Well, I guess no pun intended. There's going to be a fork in the road. I couldn't even plan it out. But yeah, there's going to be a fork in the road, and one of the forks is going to be, hey, do you want to go the Goldman Sachs.gov coin way, or hey, do you want to go the Freedom? You know, they can suck it and they can't stop it. And yeah, there could be bad people doing bad things, just like, you know, there's, you know, the U.S. government giving, you know, Iran, you know, billions of dollars of cash that was, well, I guess technically their own cash that they had stolen, you know, years before. So, you know, when conservatives want to make that argument, I'm like, well, you know, it was technically Iran's money that we stole from them and then gave it back to them. But, you know, I see where they're going with all that, but yeah, just sort of want to get your take on, I guess, everything I've just been expounding on. Well,
there's a couple things. You know, one thing, sure, having a corporate blockchain, fine, whatever, they can do whatever they want. It doesn't matter when they're still controlling the UI and what you see. I mean, you keep bringing up Steemit, but we have to remember, I mean, even Steemit removed all of Dark Overlord's content from Steemit.com. So it really is, you know, just because the data is on the blockchain doesn't mean any of the front ends are going to show it to you. That's one thing about Mastodon that's interesting, is that there's actually a bunch of different entries into that whole network, and Mastodon just one site. There's a bunch of other ones. And just because that one front end might show or not show something doesn't mean that all the other front ends won't. And that's going to be, as things go on, what we need here. You know, that's one of the big fears with centralized cryptocurrencies, you know, centralized, you know, government-controlled cryptocurrencies, is they can, if they control all the mining, they can literally say, well, this UTXO can never be spent because it will never be, no transactions that use it will ever be included in a block. So that is something that can happen, and they have complete control over that with Goldman Sachs coin, as you like to call it. But, you know, with Twitter, I mean, sure, you know, everybody, you know, saying blockchain is great. If they say, oh yeah, we build our new platform on a blockchain, you know, they'll get a nice stock pump because people love blockchain and stuff. You know, like, you know, there's, instead of Long Island iced tea, there's blockchain iced tea. You know, it's the same concept, and it's not necessarily the best way. Sure, I love the immutability of it.
Actually, there is a Long Island. Is there a Long Island blockchain company now that they want?
They changed their name from Long Island iced tea company to blockchain tea or blockchain iced tea company.
That's a scam. That's a pump and dump. That is, Alex Jones is absolutely correct about that. And it's GoldmanSachs.gov coin. That was the
Got included all in there. GoldmanSachs.gov.
Can you talk about Dark Overlord? I actually am not really familiar with that. I mean, I am familiar that they can take people's information down, but who is Dark Overlord? What were they doing, and why did they get taken down?
Do you remember a couple months ago when there were all those 9/11 document leaks that were going around the internet?
Yes.
That was Dark Overlord.
Okay.
So he had it posted in a few different places, and he got removed from wherever else he was. So he started posting it on Steemit, thinking, well, Steemit's decentralized, they can't take me down. But Steemit, who's having their own drama right now, they have a new head and they fired 75% of their staff because they're out of money. But Steemit actually removed all of the posts for Dark Overlord. Now, they're still on the blockchain, but the front end won't show anything for that user. So it's the difference between what's actually there in the data and what the user actually sees. And just like Twitter, they say, oh no, we'll never remove anything, you know, with our blockchain, whatever. It doesn't matter if they never show it to anybody. You know, it doesn't matter what's in the data. The two people who know how to find it will find it, but nobody else will actually see it. And that's the biggest thing, like you've experienced with your Facebook bans. Sure, you have all these followers, nobody ever sees your posts. And that's what they control. So
think of a tree falls over in the woods and no one hears it, you know, did it fall down? Yeah. Did it make a sound?
Exactly. So that's, you know, that's the big thing we have to keep considering as we keep moving forward. I mean, this isn't a, hey, we'll have it put on the blockchain, we're done. I mean, that's not how this game is played, unfortunately. So it's not all about blockchain. What it really is about, you know, in my perspective for this sort of stuff, is censorship resistance. And that's why what Ernie's doing with his stuff I like is it's being spread everywhere. It's old school, but it's going everywhere. And that's one of the goals of decentralized or public blockchains that anybody can mine and store on their system, is that just because one government tries to ban it's they can't do it, because it's not just, they can't just ban an IP address, they can't just ban a server or a DNS name, it's everywhere.
Yeah, and actually, so Ernie called me up yesterday because he was, I mean, it's the most excited I've ever heard him, that his site is, so it's not actually, like you can't just go to freedomsphoenix.com and see it right now, but he has another link that he sent me. And so all like 400,000 entries he has on Freedom Phoenix and videos and everything have all been put on IPFS. And so the UI doesn't look, you know, user interface, you know, if you're, you know, you're going ahead and looking at it, doesn't look amazing right now. They're working on cleaning that up right now. But the information in terms of, you know, forever and always and being there is that ability. They've already done it. They've already did this as of yesterday. This is, you know, sort of breaking type news. You know, and so he was making the rounds, calling everybody, you know, sort of honored that I was on that list. And then, you know, and that's how I ended up giving him your number. Hope you didn't mind that too much. He was asking me about something. Where can I find out more information? I'm like, hey man, Chris, he's the one that knows about this. So quit bugging me and no, bug him. No, sorry. I didn't say it that way. But he's yeah, it's really that this is, you know, if you got, you know, little Ernie and Derek who are out there, you know, coding, I mean, Ernie's not coding this, but he's, you know, the one bitching about it that gets it coded, you know, they're helping change the world and getting, you know, this is, you know, amazing, you know, what that direction they're trying to take things in. It's just, you know, in my opinion, absolutely amazing. And what I want to go now is play another clip where we've got, you know, Jack Dorsey talking about, you know, the Face ID and how, you know, you buy and sell Bitcoin on, you know, their Cash App, which I've never actually used before, their Cash App. So, you know, I probably should just to see like what the deal is and just be, you know, knowledgeable with, you know, just being in the space. But anyways, here we go.
How do you use that? Because Face ID is not.
And I don't know what is going on with my computer right now.
You just leak something we shouldn't.
Right. I don't know what is going on. It's
wow, that's weird.
But you can use it for things like, is this like a human operating this?
Hold on, we're gonna have to restart. So now when I pause it, so Jack Dorsey taking over my computer.
What am I? There's like a blue light on the back of your microphone that whenever it's playing, I'm seeing like a flash on.
We shouldn't.
No.
Yeah, it's better.
We haven't used it.
What's really weird is my the computer keeps going in and out right now.
Yeah. You don't have something like leaning on your space bar that's pausing and resuming it all the time, are you? I did that the other day.
You know, I had this clipboard on my computer. Maybe it hit the maybe that hit the space bar. Let's try to open this up.
So how do you use that? Because
okay, so now what I'm going to do is now I've got to go ahead and share the screen. And sorry to my video editor for fucking this up. All right, we should be good to go now. All right, I'll make a loud clap that way. Just cover your ears. That way I know to go back to this spot.
Face ID is not really available. Is it available to you guys? Do you know, you just leak something
we,
that you shouldn't have told
no,
me?
No. We haven't used it yet, but you can use it for things like, is this like a human operating this?
For Apple Pay. You can use it for that. So
it's completely locked into the local device. We don't have access to images of your face or whatnot, but the operating system can tell us that this is the legit owner of this phone, and therefore it is human. And technology always has to change. People will find ways around that and whatnot. But if we go the opposite direction and we look for the bots, the problem with looking for the bots is people assume that they just come through our API, but the scripting has become extremely sophisticated. People can script the app, can script the website and make it look very, very human.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going after this problem first, trying to identify the humans as much as we can, utilizing these technologies. None of this is live right now. These are considerations that we're making and trying to understand like what the impact would be and how we might evolve it. But we need to, because that information would provide context for someone like, this is an actual human that I'm talking to, and I can invest more time in it, or I can just ignore the thing because it's meaningless.
Now, is Apple willing to share that with you? I mean, when you're talking about biometrics, fingerprints, or face
ID?
No,
not the data. It's just the operating system verifies that there's an individual and it's unlocking. You know,
right.
When you use the, our Cash App uses this, right? So Square's Cash App, when you want to make a transfer to someone, when you want to send someone money, or when you want to buy Bitcoin, we turn on Face ID and you verify that you are you and you are the owner of the phone, and then it goes. We don't get images of your face. We don't see who you are.
Oh, that's what you want me to think. I know what you're saying. Yeah.
That's all.
Now I can see where that could be useful. Like, hey, you're on, you know, Kraken or Coinbase or one of these other sites, and you lose your password, and you've got to, you know, prove that it's you. So that way, they don't just, you know, give your information to anybody. But I also see where this can be, you know, used to be the complete control grid as well. Where, you know, hey, I've got this money on my phone, and I want to go send you $100. Well, then first I've got to, get a, you know, facial recognition, and then, which nowadays, you know, they maybe just go to a Facebook profile and then just hold up to that, and maybe that's what, or people have done like 3D printed, you know, characters of themselves, and that's somehow, you know, able to fool the system as well. And so I just see this as being something that could be quite the slippery slope into, you know, the man being able to control things. And I think it was Bob Stanley of the Red Pill, where he had commented, you know, the reason that the government hasn't really, you know, come in and killed anybody in this space yet is because they want to have, you know, all the smart geniuses that are out there basically developing for free and finding out, hey, this is the best system to scale this in a certain way. And then once, you know, we've get all the 200 IQ guys who are working for free in their mom's basement, who then go and develop this, and the government's going to say, you know, hey, thank you very much, we're going to put our twist on it, and now you guys are more fucked than ever. I mean, that's pretty much where I think it's probably headed down the line. I mean, do you think I'm wrong on that, or what do you think about Jack Dorsey, you know, having, you know, this Face ID mixing with Bitcoin to buy and sell and trade?
Well, it depends how they do it. I mean, right now, like, say you use the Edge wallet on your phone, you can set it to unlock with your face to send. And it's just using that encryption layer on your iPhone to lock the keys. Now, what's, you know, the Bitcoin network itself has no clue what I use to get the keys to sign the message. What it seems like he's talking about is including the fact that I unlocked it with my face as part of the protocol level. So the who I'm sending it to or whatever will get recorded that, yeah, this person unlocked it with his face to actually send it. And I'm a bit iffy about that. I'm not thrilled with that idea, because then it's going to be like, you know, once it is cracked, honestly, I haven't looked into how easy Face ID is to crack, but I'm sure people have done it. And as more and more stuff is tied to it, more and more people will do it. But I'm not thrilled with that as a concept, because
conversation too.
That does add tracking. That proves that I am with my phone when I'm sending that money. Whereas the network, in my mind, doesn't need to have any knowledge of that. And that adds trackability, because they can tie you that way, more ways to tie you to things.
And that would be sort of like the globalist, you know, type dream system, is to have, you know, this, you know, buy and sell mark of the beast type crypto, where the only way you can do it is through their own approval. And now we've gone ahead, and the crypto space is just, you know, tie people into a system that was, you know, worse than what we were even getting out of in the first place. And that was one of my hesitations about blockchain right from the beginning, is I was like, wait a minute, if it's all, you know, through this big government system, you know, I just read Creature from Jekyll Island. So I was, you know, all my conspiracy stuff was, you know, up to, you know, like an 11 in terms of being able to look out for stuff. And, you know, and listening to Peter Schiff and Alex Jones, you know, it was, you know, part of the reason why, you know, I was also thinking, oh, hey, you know, the idea of this breaking outside of, you know, the small AMCAP bubble that's certainly in right now, you know, the odds of it are pretty low, and the odds of Bitcoin doing what it did and where it's already gotten to has frankly far exceeded my expectations. That the, you know, when it was $30, I told one of the richest people I know that, hey, you know, this could, you know, easily go to zero, or maybe it could get up to, I don't know, like $10,000 someday, not thinking that it would actually go from like, you know, 10,000 to 20,000 span of like what seemed like, you know, a week, but it was probably like, yeah, like a month and a half. And so it's just absolutely crazy. And it was getting to the point where, you know, all these people were coming out of the woodwork, and, you know, it could have went up to 100,000. I don't know. I mean, it just, it depends on the psych. Once you're in that type of mania, you know, honestly, the difference of going to 20,000 to, you know, 100,000 is a lot less of it going from 1,000 to 20, you know, and from a pure math and, you know, averages type standpoint. And another thing that I see them, you know, probably doing at some point is probably, you know, getting everyone's, you know, voices on some sort of like blockchain or voice prints of like, hey, maybe, you know, Tim was saying some sort of, you know, Chris was saying something we didn't like him saying, and now we're going to kick him off. But if he tries to circumvent the system and come back on, then we've already got that guy's voice print from somewhere else, and we're just going to, the AI is just automatically going to ban you. And I see it headed in that direction.
Oh yeah, just assume if they have a way to track you to keep you from getting what they don't want you to say out there, they will do it. I mean, it will be voices, it will be faces, it will be whatever. I mean, I hate sounding like a conspiracy tin hat, you know, foil guy, but that is what is going to happen. I mean, yes, they will. I mean, YouTube already monitors your videos for what you say, and if you say the wrong thing, they'll demonetize you if their AI determines that. I mean, that's happening right now. So that is going to keep happening. That's going to be spread. These big corporations are going to keep sharing that among themselves. But that's why I feel like the next step for social media and video sharing stuff will be like this IPFS stuff. Will be, you know, they'll be, you know, Gab is, you know, for all intents and purposes, the right-wing Twitter, even though it's not. But there will be more things like that popping up. There will be, you know, the right-wing Twitter, the libertarian Twitter, the, you know, horse trading Twitter, the whatever. It'll segment more and balkanize the social media network, so everybody will be more in their own bubbles, but at least theoretically they'll be able to share with each other without the big corporation censoring them. That's what I see happening next. Whether or not it does determines how much control the government will give to Twitter. If people get their way and give Twitter and Facebook the, you know, the roles of, you know, PG&E in the early 1900s, then they will entrench themselves and there won't be the competition if they are important enough that, you know, oh no, Twitter's controlling free speech, we have to regulate them so that they stop it. Well, that's actually going to give Twitter more power over everything.
And so it's funny how you didn't mention, you know, left-wing Twitter, because that's called Twitter.
that's called Twitter, yes. Yeah, so there's
and so we didn't really have to mention, and I started getting on Twitter like October 2016. That's right after I got shadow banned on Facebook. And I'm like, why am I going to go spend any time trying to get, you know, oh, wow, I've got all these people following me on Twitter. You know, who gives a shit? Because it seemed like that one is much, much more easier to have things go viral and get crazy big on Twitter. It seems like it's a lot easier in terms of like the engagements, and you can hashtag things and getting stuff out. You know, and it's, you know, my fault for not, I guess, getting on early on. I had a buddy of mine who's actually does like the, I wouldn't say buddy anymore, say an acquaintance. You know, I've called him out for being a SJW virtual signaler, and so I don't think he really likes me anymore. But, you know, he's, you know, helping craft policy at Facebook, and he's crafting policy at Twitter, and, you know, he's sort of like a big guru in the space. But I got to give him credit that he was on it like when I was still in college, and he was even younger than me, and he was on it from day one and helped monetize it and was selling this package to different companies from way back when. And I just saw on his thing that he's given a presentation this week over at Facebook headquarters about all the social inclusiveness and how you can do all the crap that they want to do. And he was one of the first guys that I saw talking about Bitcoin as well. You know, he had posted, I mean, you might say first, I mean, in 2014 or 13, he posted, you know, hey, does anybody know about Bitcoin? And then he shared that post like one of those like 5-year later things. He shared it last year, and I was, and I'm like, well, who actually responded to you about knowing about Bitcoin? He's like, actually, you were the first person that responded to me that you already knew what it was. So again, it's the libertarians who, you know, are way ahead of the curve and all this stuff. But now I just wanted to play one last clip we got here from Jack Dorsey, where it's talking about, you know, identifying the different credible voices that are out there and who to promote. So I wonder, will I be promoted?
How do we increase the credibility or reputation of accounts? How do we identify credible voices within a particular domain, not just through this very coarse grain blue verified badge, but if you're an expert in a particular topic, how do we recognize that in real time and show that so that we can provide more context to who you're talking to? And if you want to engage in a deeper conversation or just ignore, mute, or block them.
Yeah, so that'll be like, oh, so we're talking about economics. Paul Krugman, you're pushed right up. Tom Woods and Bob Murphy, you're pushed all the way down. I mean, we know exactly where this is going. I mean, and this is, but you know, the more these guys push, the more they, you know, continue to hit us with their constant stream of bullshit, the more there's going to be, you know, like who has the smarter, I mean, yeah, the government has got more money than us, but who's got, you know, the smarter intellectuals, you know, the crypto anarchist space or the government? I mean, I'm going to take the latter. Or sorry, the, you know, the former every single day of the week. But again, they've got so much money and they can hijack people and they can do all sorts of things to, you know, and have people do their bidding. But yeah, I think this is all going towards that social control. And I do know you got to get going soon. So, you know, I don't want to hold you any longer. But yeah, let's just, I guess, if you want to, you know, get some comments on that and we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, thanks for that. I've been trying to keep an eye on the time here. But yeah, basically it's who to identify that agrees with us. And that's the real problem here. And that's why the free market is so much better at this than anything else, is the free market will reward people who are actually successful at doing it. How do we know who's best at this? Well, they're the ones who have done it. How do we know they know the most? Well, they're the ones who are sharing most. And, you know, honestly, I hate to say, you know, there's the social wisdom, but if they're successful, that counts for a lot more than any number of words somebody can say. And, you know, you have Krugman, you have Bob Murphy, and you know, the two sides of things there. And Krugman has been quite successful in getting the social justice media to tack onto him and whatever his goals are. I love listening to Contra Krugman every week because Bob has a gift of finding where he's contradicted himself a week ago, a month ago, a year ago. And I don't know, what I hate, you know, the thought that always comes to me whenever I hear social justice warrior is, you know, if it was just, they just call them justice warriors. But because everybody who looks at it knows that it isn't just, they have to tack on the social in front of it to explain what they're doing. So I care about justice. If you have to add modifiers to it, then it's no longer justice.
Yeah, but, it's like people who say, you know, I want to have freedom, but, you know, if you got to have, you know, a but after it, then, you know, probably not any freedom.
Ignore everything before the but.
Yeah, but I do think that this is a very important conversation, you know, that really kind of gets out to the masses, because there's obviously, you know, a huge overlap between, you know, the Alex Jones community and I'd say the more liberty community. So I mean, it's almost like he's, you know, the first initial drug that gets people in. And then as you then maybe head over to Ernie, then from there, maybe head over to like a Mark and Rose or, like Jeff Berwick. But it's important that, you know, for the people that are always, you know, bash in the liberty community that are bashing that side. Well, you know, if it wasn't for those people or like the Lauren Southerns, you know, to help bring people in, someone like myself, like I'm someone that helps, it kind of reaches across both sides, but can get people over to this side to then be, you know, red pilled, so to speak. And, you know, a lot of people, I guess, in this community have such high standards of everything has to be, you know, absolutely perfect and you can't, you know, deviate at all. I mean, if that was a standard, I mean, G. Edward Griffin would be, you know, wouldn't be welcomed, or Ron Paul wouldn't be welcomed, or just about anybody in this space who's, you know, had a gigantic influence wouldn't be welcomed. So, you know, it's important that we don't, you know, cannibalize all of our own, but, you know, I want to, you know, I don't want this to be a bash on Alex Jones. I want this to be able to, you know, like a crossover of, hey, you know, you're both very right and you're both very oblivious and wrong. Both at the same time on the same subject. And it's just an issue that I think needs to be further expounded on. But I know that you can't expound further because you got to go. Definitely appreciate your insights and your wisdom.
One comment on Alex Jones. A, he has changed a lot since the early years. But yeah. B, there is value in having somebody out there convincing people of the truth that they are being lied to. Even if everything else he says is completely bat crazy, he is convincing people that they shouldn't just trust the authorities on everything. And there is value in that. Yeah, I by no means do I agree with 90% of what he says, particularly now.
Yeah,
but he has served a useful purpose.
The show has changed tremendously, but you know, mm-hmm. there's enough stuff that's actually verifiable that you can go back to, that he posts the links to, that you can see. Yeah. So if you parse through all the BS and again, I mean, if you go back to 2011 or 10 when I picked him up, you know, how many, and I saw him from, it was a Bohemian Grove episode of the History Channel. And then one day, I think it was like the royal wedding was occurring and I was trying to figure out what the last name was and I was Googling it. I couldn't, or, you know, at the time, I don't think they had DuckDuckGo, but I was, you know, I was search engineing it and it ended up being like the Windsor family. The real name was Sax Coburg Gotha, and it somehow took me to an Alex Jones clip. I'm sure nowadays there's, and then it just happened to be like the next day is when the government happened to kill Bin Laden, supposedly, and all the, yeah, Dr. Steve Pachenik and all this crazy stuff. But man, who is this guy? Like, this is, you know, but now, I mean, the show has changed. It's become a, you know, a giant Trump 24/7 circle jerk, and that's why, you know, I'll go on listen to some of the guests. You know, I caught like a, I wanted to see what he was going to say about, you know, Bitcoin and yeah, and so he's, he sort of threw the baby out with the bathwater on that. And but no, it's important, I think, to have people like they're out like him. But you know, does he represent me in everything? No. Does he get really annoying all the time now? Pretty much yes. But he has put a lot of truth out there, and he helped defeat Hillary Clinton, and so for that, very thankful. So,
he raised very important points about Joe Rogan in that interview. So that was good.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on the show today. This is the Crypto Wealth Show. That is a new rebranding we're doing. We also are running the Liberty Advisor Show, which as the name probably sounds, the Crypto Wealth Show is about crypto and the Liberty Advisor Show is about everything that's not about crypto. So I was getting some complaints of like, hey, you know, I like all the stock market stuff or politics, but I hate all the other stuff. And, you know, and then, which sucks is sometimes there's like definitely crossover episodes. I'm like, well, how do I even label this? You know, even with like the Lynn Ulbricht, I ended up labeling it Liberty Show because we were talking about more Liberty issues. I didn't want to just be a circle jerk to the crypto crowd. I wanted to, you know, reach out to an audience that maybe not already knows this information and try to give the other side of that story. So anyways, I'm rambling now. I'll let you get going. Thank you very much for coming on, and I will talk to you later. I'll see you at Anarchapoco.
See you in less than a week.
All right. Take care, man.
See you.
Why would anybody want to buy Bitcoin inside their IRA? I mean, the whole point of Bitcoin was to have peer-to-peer electronic cash. So why are you going to have a financial intermediary buy Bitcoin for you? Why don't you just cash out your 401k, cash out your IRA, cash out your retirement plan, and just buy Bitcoin on your own? Well, the reason for that is if somebody had January 1st, 2017, invested $100,000 into Bitcoin, and then 1 year later, they would have had, after taxes and the 10% penalty, they would have just under $900,000. So you would have turned $100,000 into close to $900,000. So you're obviously doing something right. However, there is a better way that they could have done it. What they could have done is they could have done a Roth conversion. With a Roth conversion, you save the 10% penalty, so you've got 10% more that could be invested into crypto. And the beauty of this is that now all of your gains are now forever tax-free. So you put the $100,000 in, and now, and again, you're getting out of paying the 10% penalty. And now, after even all my management fees, you now have a little over $1 million. We have all the exact specific numbers linked down or should be on the screen right now. I don't have it memorized, but you know, to me, you know, $1 million sounds a little bit better than $900,000, and having tax-free gains forever sounds better than having $900,000 that now any appreciation or hopeful potential appreciation would then be subject to tax. And the other reason why we thought of this, or really the genesis of this, is I had heard a lot of people doing this, and I thought that, hey, there's gotta be a better way. But the main reason is you've got a lot of people who the only money they have to invest is inside of their retirement accounts. A lot of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. I mean, even people who have $1 million IRAs, a lot of them don't have actual extra money to invest. They don't have rainy day funds. And the rainy day funds should be kept in actual safe, liquid, you know, basically cash or really short-term treasury bills. It shouldn't be invested into Bitcoin. And so a lot of people just don't have that extra money to invest. And so taking a small percentage of your IRA or 401k and then, you know, putting it into Bitcoin, if you know what you're doing and you understand the risk
and you actually believe in this philosophically is actually, I think, you know, a good move to make. So again, if you're going to pull money out of your 401k to buy Bitcoin, you should talk to myself, because I think that the Roth IRA conversion is a much better way of doing things. And that is why somebody would want to consider having Bitcoin inside their IRA as opposed to cashing out their 401k and just buying it outright.
Okay, well, that's great. You've got people who have IRAs and 401ks, and you know, there's different things you can do or that I can do to help them out. But what about the person that has maybe a few million dollars of gains and they bought it on Coinbase or Kraken, or they got several millions of dollars of gains and all of a sudden now you want to go buy your Lambo or buy a new house? I mean, there's no way you're going to be able to skirt around the IRS, because they're going to wonder, you know, hey, how'd you get that $500,000 to buy a new house? Well, for those people, probably the best person to explain this is actually my friend Ernest Hancock, as he was giving me an introduction at Anarchapoco. Anyways, I'll let Ernie take it away, because we can also have advanced trust strategies for the people that have millions of dollars of gains. This is not just for people who are looking to invest parts of their IRAs or 401ks.
A good friend of mine, Tim Pachote, he's a financial advisor at Scottsdale. He'll be speaking at the TDV event. You'd be able to bring the crypto into the system. How would you be able to do a foundation, a trust, a this, a that, and so on? And Tim was at the party, and I go, Tim, what up? He's been spending months that he's getting ready to present to you guys Monday on how you can take your crypto and not pay capital gains on it, not have taxes on it. I'm going, man, you need to talk to Tim.
Thank you for listening to the show. One of the ways you can help support the show is by seeing if it makes sense to invest with myself. I'm a certified financial planner with Innovative Advisory Group, LLC. Innovative specializes in self-directed IRAs where you can invest into virtually anything, including virtual assets and cryptocurrencies inside your retirement accounts. And get this, you can actually hold on to the private key. And that's something that nobody else is doing, at least with the help of an advisor. We also run protective growth portfolios where you invest a small amount of your portfolio into put options, and while the rest, and that basically helps protect the rest of the portfolio. Not very many people are familiar with put options, but a lot of people are familiar with homeowners insurance, and it works in a very similar fashion. So essentially what you're doing is using a very, very small percentage of basically, you know, the value of the home to protect the rest of the home. And if the house doesn't burn down or there isn't a major catastrophe, then you're basically out on the cost of the insurance. Flip side on, you know, if your house ends up burning down, well, then you build your house back. And that's really the same thing that's going on here. So if the market ends up tanking, and we know the most that you can possibly lose on your investment. And honestly, if the market were to go down 60, 70%, and you're only down single digits potentially, then that's an amazing buying opportunity. Lord Nathan Rothschild said it best, that the best time to invest is when there's blood in the streets. But if your money goes down with everybody else's, then you're not able to take advantage of the next crisis. And also, if you're just camping out in cash or in bonds, making next to nothing, you could be going broke safely for a very long time. And then you've got to know when to time the market. And that's something that basically nobody can do. Now, on the flip side, if I'm wrong in all this and the market keeps going higher, or the Federal Reserve comes out, or the European Central Bank comes out and says, hey, we're going to print a whole bunch more money, and the market goes to infinity, well, then you'll go up to infinity minus the cost of that put option. So I think that this is a great strategy that you definitely want to learn more about. I mean, just given the craziness that's going on right now, if you're heavy into cash right now, heavy into bonds, or even heavy into stocks, especially if you're close to actually needing those funds for retirement, or just needing those funds in general, maybe for a big project, or maybe you work on a crypto and you raised a whole bunch of money, that this is something that we can help protect yourself and protect your loved ones. And there's nothing you have to lose by scheduling a free consultation with us. And actually, there's a chance you could lose a lot by not talking with us in general. If you go and click on our website in the upper right-hand corner, there's a Work with Tim button up there. You can see all of our plans, ways we work with our clients. Pricing can all be found there. And given that I'm sort of out there on a lot of different political issues, I know that I'm not going to be for everybody. You know, that's sort of my way of qualifying you, not the other way around. But, you know, I'm fine. I'm not trying to have all six billion people out there like me. And I'm here to really, at the end of the day, to tell the truth and to make money, not necessarily make friends. So head over to thelibertyadvisor.com and let's see what we can do for you. Thank you.